What's up, everybody? We're here for Mudball Monday.
But when you get it kind of the pre-dormant, let's call it, where the grass is hardly growing, but it still has some firmness and greenness to it, can be pretty darn nice. I think that's definitely one of the highlights of fall golf that I would call out.
No. I got to insert myself here because the two cooking times are different, right? So it is double the work, is it not? All right, so the Farmer's Almanac tells me that
Farmer's Almanac, is that even still a thing?
That's a thing. They have it online now. You kind of cut it off during dirt. How many biscuits did you put down last weekend?
Four, plus four breakfast burritos. So
excellent. Good morning. As you're hearing this, it is Monday, October 16th. It is currently a little bit earlier than that. It is Walker Simas and Henry Schimpf. We are back for Mudball Monday. Always fired up to be back. Two recordings in two nights. It's good to see you, Henry Schimpf. How are things?
Things are good. It's good to be back. Just potting every night. That is a verb, potting. Excited to be back for Mudball Monday. It always feels like it's been longer than it's been. So good to be back.
Yeah, age old saying, fuck it, I'm going to eat ramen. It's kind of we're in that season where it's getting a little nipply out. So today we're talking about fall golf. And of course, to begin, we're going to begin with the dirt. Henry Schimpf, why don't you start us off? What have you been drinking, eating, reading, and thinking this week?
Well, I've got a new one for you here. So doing a live taste test on the pod. I have never seen this before. Topo Chico Sabores. Flavored Topo Chico. I'm a little nervous. It might kind of ruin the purity. Let's take a peek. Yeah, fuck. That's nice. That's nice. And of course, I mean, what are we going with here? Big blueberry.
Big blueberry.
Big blueberry, baby. You know, it's a...
And hibiscus.
Exactly. It's a Spindrift vibe. It's like... It's topo, and then I guess it just says 3% juice. It's not sweetened, which I'm a fan of. I don't really like a sweet seltzer. Yeah, I'm with that. That shit slaps. Hey, you know what else slaps? The goddamn Mudball Half Calf. The Mudball Half Calf absolutely slaps. I've been slapping it every morning. Anyone who hasn't gotten involved in the Good Walk game, code the tie, THETIE, at goodwalkcoffee.com. You can get anything. Cold brews, the Mudball Half Calf, of course. I've been on the Clubhouse South American Dark Roast. You still gaming the breakfast ball, Columbia Medium Roast?
I am, but I put in an order today for also the Clubhouse and then some more Mudball Half Calf, of course. So we'll have the trio going. We'll have like kind of a full calf, medium roast. I'll have some dark roast. I'll have some, the half calf covers all three bases. We have light, medium, and dark. We have calf, we have non-calf. It's good shit. Anyways, back to your dirt.
Yeah, and to finish things off, I got, you know, got my Good Walk shirt on right here. So we're just, you know, banging them over the head. That's just how the bullshit goes. Eating, rolling straight into my eating. I've got three things. I'm going to be quick on each. So I mentioned on last Mudball Monday, I was going to Roaring Gap. The over-under was 4.5 on biscuits. They're kind of right at that size where you can go like two biscuits or a biscuit plus fill in the blank. They're not massive biscuits by any means. So I was going biscuit plus breakfast burrito every morning. And what made these breakfast burritos, I did like a couple sausage, egg and cheese and a couple bacon, egg and cheese. They add grilled onions to them, which I've never seen necessarily. Complete and utter gangster move. You kind of need something to take you out of just the bacon, egg and cheese or the sausage, egg and cheese. No shade to any of those condiments. But yeah, just fantastic stuff. The grilled onions, that was awesome. Number two, the Thai guys headed to New Orleans this weekend. So just all sorts of eating festivities on tap. That's going to be just silly good. And finally, varietals. I mean, got to talk a little varietals here. We were talking Mudball Half Calf. So, okay, bear with me on this one. Brown rice, right? Like, I like long grain. I love short grain. But there are pros and cons to each. Long grain, you get better volume. Short grain, just better overall texture, flavor. Short grain is the king, but you only get like 60-65% of the volume that you do out of long grain. And I mean, I never hate looking at a meal and being like, oh, that's a big meal, you know? And so that's something I appreciate out of long grain. we fuck around and talk about half calf all the time. Why not go half long grain, half short grain, right? Varietals, baby. Marry the varietals. We don't have to pit them against each other. I don't think long grain and short grain take any issue. All right, I'm done. Sorry. Reading.
No. I got to insert myself here because the two cooking times are different, right? So it is double the work, is it not? Like you can't cook them together because you'll get inferior long grain or inferior short grain.
We'll keep you posted. We will keep you posted. I'm a rice cooker guy. You know, the old rice cooker, you just go power white or brown and let it do its thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, we'll just simply have to keep you posted. I'll see how it goes. I've got two R's. Got to hit reading and then briefly on rotation. So it's not my dirt today. It's my dirt. Got to get the little tongue roll there for the double R. Reading the final days of Roger Federer, part of the title that I missed, and other things. And so one of the things I've really enjoyed about this book is that the author contextualizes the end of Federer's career with things that are going on alongside it. So, you know, there's so many things that you think about that just, you kind of remember them in a vacuum, you know, like think about Tiger winning the 08 US Open and you're like, okay, well, what else was going on around then? And you don't really remember a lot of the context, at least I don't. And that's true of a lot of things. So I think it's a really interesting way to write a book to provide other context intentionally so that people are able to kind of remember everything a little bit better. So that's been really enjoyable. And then got to hit my rotation. So I mentioned last week, Hot Mulligan band that I've been into, and a listener of the tie, shout out Sam Ferdet, hits me up on Instagram, said he's a fan, actually knows the guys and just a general fan of the genre, and makes this playlist for me of a lot of different songs similar in the same genre. And it's just been fantastic. So that's the kind of shit that gets you a shout out on Mudball Monday. Had to do it because, yeah, just awesome stuff. Been banging that playlist every morning in the gym. So that's been great. And then finally, my prayers were answered. I don't know that they were prayers necessarily, but I talked a couple of Mudball Mondays ago about how, you know, the 100 degree days pushing into October were starting to wear on me. For the first time in, I shit you not, like 6 months, I walked outside this evening and I was a little cold. I was wearing just this golf shirt and I was like, the wind blew a little and I was like, I'm a little cold. And that I hate the cold, but that was not a bad thing. So it has finally started to cool down just a little bit. And then finally, you know, putting update. I don't know. I don't know what to say. I don't know. I have gone to the claw, and what is equal parts great and horrifying is when I've done the claw just enough, which means like I've put with it for a round and a half. No, like 3.5 rounds, actually. I've done it just enough that when I go back and grip it conventional, it's not like foreign necessarily, but it feels a little funky, you know? So I kind of feel like I'm sailing the Titanic. There are icebergs all over and like my dinghy is nowhere to be found. Like the contingency plan has exited stage left. So, you know, we're pegging it in the 4-ball qualifier and what, T minus, I don't know, way too few days, 5 days. And yeah, if I go out there and start missing 2 footers, which is quite possible, like there's no backup plan. I guess that's what wedges are made for. I'll just start putting with a wedge. I can probably do that better than a chip with a wedge. So that's what I'm thinking with the putting right now. The claw is it's clawing. There's not a whole lot else to say.
Actually, technically, as you are listening to this, we are going to be out on the golf course.
That is true.
Getting after it. So that's kind of a cool gig. Good shit. We're on very similar pages this week for dirt. More on that on my thinking. Drinking, you kind of helped me into my coffee run there, so I won't beat that over the head anymore. I will say, though, as things cool down, I'm just trying, like, kind of a loose goal of mine is just to sweat as much as I did in August, which may be impossible, but I feel like that's just a good goal to have. And there are plenty of ways to get that done. What that means for my drinking category is more water and more salt and just sweat as much as I can. And those two things, water and salt, are just kind of a byproduct or response to sweating a lot. As Henry mentioned, tie offsite number Not enough, but we've done this a time or two before. Very excited to get back to Nolans. And the only thing I'll say to cap off the drinking front is that I feel like we got to get into the Sazeracs. You know, it's like the OG American cocktail, really, and big in Nolans. So we got to get us one of those.
Describe to
Eating.
me a Sazerac. I got to see if that's on the menu or not.
It's like, I mean, it could be any sort of brown liquor, basically.
I'm listening.
Absinthe, bitters,
I'm
squeeze of
listening.
lemon. That's the vibe. Just kind of
I've
like
heard.
a like an old school Bev.
Yeah, that dog will hunt.
Yeah. Eating. You know, for better and for worse, I've been having a lot of ground beef lately, you know. I don't know how you feel about ground anything, but
I've eaten ground venison like the last 4 nights. I'm highly pro ground meat.
well, it's great, but it gets on overplay watch pretty fast, and so this is important for the OGs, because I'm back on the oil game officially. I picked up some olive oil at the Sto this week, and I did it because I got 92.8 or 93.7, I don't know, ground beef, which is pretty lean,
You got to
exactly what you
lubricate
want.
that boy.
Yeah, so this is the way that I do it, and I want to see if we have any like key differences in our prep here. But non-negotiable cast iron pan. If you're doing anything else, you're wrong. Sorry. Cast iron pan has to be ripping. Non-negotiable. I'm sorry. And then I throw the whole block in, and I basically cut it into like cubes, right? And then I don't touch it. Like I let the first side get a really, really nice sear.
Exactly
And
how I do it.
this is awesome. Now, as we know, if you've ever cooked any sort of meat before, the second side just isn't going to get the same love as the first side. So just let the first side be awesome. Now, no seasoning, no salt, no sort of flavoring seasoning, no rubs, nothing. The sear is the sear. I don't want any additional like liquid getting involved in the crisping situation. The oil has been introduced at this point. And then, but it's not much. It's enough to kind of get the cracklings on the outside. Then I go in, honestly, having like a really nice strainer. Doesn't need to be anything fancy, but it's that and like a scraper tool, two of my favorite kitchen utensils. I will then strain my ground beef, and then I will toss a little bit more olive oil back in the pan with my ground beef, and then I will then proceed to season it. Salt, adobo, kind of that's been the vibe recently. And then to cap off eating, I will just say that I've been pickling all sorts of shit. I mean, I've been pickling, yeah, I got some white vinegar to like clean out something with my AC unit. And I'm like, dude, I'm never gonna use all of this vinegar. And I'm just like, fuck it. You know, I got a red onion and a couple cucumbers, and we're just pickling everything right now, which is a great vibe. Makes like any meal that is strikingly average, turns it into a pretty good meal.
Could you pickle blueberries?
Hey, now that is not all right. I had a thought this week because I talked to somebody who doesn't like onions, and if you don't like onions, just go ahead and close your phone and stop listening. But blueberries are kind of the same way. It's like, how do you not like onions? There are like a million ways to prepare onions. You like sweet, you like super salty, crispy, you know, mushed, you know, blueberries. Like you can make jams out of it. You could make pancakes. It's like, you know, it's not a one size fits all situation. To cap eating, and I will cap eating, I've been low on rice, so I'll leave that to you. Really high on apples. I think we got into cosmic crisp discussion the other day, and just sweet potatoes. I've just been like just a sweet potato like every day at least.
Varietals. What are we talking?
No, just like standard orange guy, you know, nothing crazy.
All
No,
right, all
no
right.
purples, no. And you know, look, sorry, but I haven't had fingerlings in a while too. I love some
Orange
like
has its place in the world. It's the maybe not the superior, but it's great if you're cubing and roasting or air frying. But I just don't do orange if I'm going baked. If it's baked in the oven or an air fryer and I'm going whole and like eating the flesh kind of as is, there's that weird kind of pumpkiny twinge to orange sweet potato that I personally like. I can eat it, but it's not my favorite. That's where purple and white really shine. But yeah, if we're going roasted hunks, orange is banging.
Yeah, I've just been like mad efficient this week. So this has kind of been the vibe. Cutting board, like a peeler, get a bowl, all of the skin, which you hate, I know, goes in a bowl, trash. Sorry.
Yeah, it's a problem.
Yeah, it sucks. Then cubed, microwave, a little bit of salt, and then it goes in the pan that the ground beef was cooked in, so it gets all that the cracklings and all that shit. I
It's
will throw a lid
catastrophe.
on just to kind of let things hang out for a little while in the steam room. So that's it. That is it for reading. Excuse me, eating, reading. You know, I've feel like I've been hitting reading over the head with the same shit, and probably will continue to be for a long time. But sometimes, particularly in the evenings, I'll dive into this little book. Called Peter's Quotations. No idea where I got this book. It's just like literally a book of quotes, and it's a fun thing to like, you know, sift through, but you're never going to spend 15 or 20 minutes doing this. I was just reading. It was like Monday night, and I flipped to like a random page. The first fucking quote I read, get this, quote, "Man blames fate for other accidents, but feels personally responsible when he makes a hole in one." So thought that was applicable. And then thinking, here's where we get into the crux of it. Tie off site, get a little competition going. I am all in on the TrackMan Maestro, Joe Mayo, all in on SpinLoft, really focused on a couple things. So like I've been trying to get out daily. It hasn't happened daily, but the last like 2 or 3 weeks, just trying to get out and get reps and reps and reps and reps. And I'm focused on a couple things. Setup is obviously crucial with chipping and like just kind of focused on bumping those hips forward a little bit and just getting a little more left, but not like unnecessarily left, not like exaggerated left. Just kind of, I'm really just trying to mimic Victor Hovland. I mean, that's honestly what's happening. His action looks so fucking good right now. It's insane. And then, you know, I'm trying to move my head left in the backswing a little bit to get my low point just kind of in front of the ball. And I'm just full on embracing forward shaft lean, which is something I've been terrified by for like at forever. There was a moment like earlier this year where I did hit a few chips cross-handed because I was interested by what Fitzpatrick was
Bitsy.
doing. And it is interesting. Like you can hit some pretty good chips like that, but I'm good for a blade every now and then with that kind of method. And I don't know how y'all feel about playing golf when it actually matters, but I don't like even the slightest chance of a blade. I'd much rather chunk one, to be real with you. So it just feels good. Like it feels good being in front of the ball. It feels good knowing that, you know, if I deliver the club in a certain way, I can afford to have a lot of shaft lean. And the way that Mr. Mayo is explaining it actually makes sense to a dumb guy like me. So I've really been enjoying his content. He's been on the ball. I haven't subscribed to the Patreon yet, though. So maybe that's next. We'll see.
I love the energy hearing that you're practicing up for us to go peg it. You know, I think that the vibe that I've been going with, you often hear the famous Mike Tyson quote, "Everyone's got a plan until they get punched in the mouth." I think there are two ways to go with that. One is you create that contingency plan for when you were punched in the mouth. And two, and more the plan that I've gone with, especially when it comes to chipping and putting, is you just avoid being punched in the mouth. And if you are, then, you know, it is what it is. So I'm banking on not getting punched in the mouth, basically. But we'll see what, you know, the first grainy Bermuda lie of the day has to say about that. So anyway, we've got to get out of the dirt, got to get to the episode. It's been a long one.
Speaking of that, it is it's officially fog off. I mean, today, I don't think we need to like over formalize today, but I do want to talk about kind of the changes in turf when we start to see fog off fall upon us. Like, obviously there are a lot of different locales for all of you listening. If you're in the Northeast, if you're kind of in the central US, if you're in California, you know, it's kind of a world of its own, and Florida is too, to a degree. But I do want to talk about, you know, kind of turf conditions, and fall always seems like the shortest season of the year, and there's some really great stuff that happens during the season with golf, and just talking about taking advantage of that stuff. And then just some of the in-betweens, like, you know, pre and post round, kind of how things are a little bit different in the fall as we're evolving into winter golf here. And then just talk about some locales, like just talk about where fall golf is the best and where fall golf sucks and all that. So we'll just kind of go back and forth. The first thing that I want to talk about, Henry, is like when we were growing up, I'm struggling to remember when and if fall aerification took place, because that's kind of the central theme here is after a certain point, you know, they're not really going to aerify over the winter. Like the whole point of aerification is you're trying to get oxygen into the ground when it's like using that for fuel when the grass is growing. And when the grass is no longer growing, you don't really need it anymore. So that's kind of the first thing. And we can talk about temperature too, because 50 degrees is kind of that number, right? Like you want to play golf in that perfect 65 degrees. But at that point, the grass is still growing. You know, if you've had a couple frosty mornings so far, you're actually in really good shape as far as turf conditions go. So Henry, to start us off today, like, what do you see? Let's just start like in the Carolinas, something that's really familiar. What do you see as like the sweet spot as far as turf conditions go? Like what's different from the summertime?
I think you get some firmer conditions. Like the summer, it just gets so soft. You know, the grass gets long and certain places can kind of tighten it up a little bit. But I think the fall, you can hit that sweet spot where the grass is still growing and so it's lush, but it's not quite that dormant grass, which frankly, I really like dormant. Good dormant can be just electric. But when you get it kind of the pre-dormant, let's call it, where the grass is hardly growing, but it still has some firmness and greenness to it, can be pretty darn nice. I think that's definitely one of the highlights of fall golf that I would call out. You know, the weather's starting to dry out a bit as well. You're probably, especially in kind of southern locales, you're not getting as much rain. And so you can get those firmer ground conditions, cooler temperatures can bring that out as well. It's good shit.
I mean, one of the things that I feel like we love so much about summer golf is just the fact that the ball goes so far. But
oh,
what
the body
I love,
moves. Oh, and the lubricated moves. Body. That's the part that I just yes. Like, I cannot. That's why summer golf will always win for me. It's like being able to just knowing that you're going to flex that shaft. You know, you give me a 4-iron and it's like, yes, the shaft will flex. And there's a whole different conversation about. Okay, let's do it real quick. I've always had this take that, like, why do we use the same shaft when it's 100 degrees versus 40? You're not moving the same way. You're not putting the same speed into it. I really want to get, I don't think a stiff would work, but like kind of a stiff plus sort of set to play with when it's like less than 50 degrees and an X when it's greater than that. But I mean, basically, I played all my golf this summer in anywhere between 80 and 112 degrees. And this past weekend, I put Roaring Gap, it was like sub 45 both days. And all of a sudden, I'm like, yeah, that shaft don't flex anymore. You know, I just.
The ball's not drawn anymore.
Yeah. Harry Potter golf.
Yeah. No, I feel like in the fall, what tends to happen is I don't get those like juiced ball flights. Like I'm not just hitting the ball miles. Flyers don't go quite as far. But also you get that jump forward that you don't get in the summertime. So it plays the same, but it just feels nicer outside. That's what I love so much. And that's what I miss. Like kind of obsolete in Florida. There really is no such thing as fall. And if it is, it doesn't really have the same effect on turf conditions that it does in the Carolinas or especially the Northeast. You know, and I was looking into, obviously super in tune with the aerification schedules in Florida, but I was looking before we recorded up in the Northeast just kind of to see what they did. And I see that like in the Northeast, they do kind of a spring and summer type thing. So maybe fall golf in the Northeast is just dialed and unbelievable right now. It probably is. And I see that in Texas, they're kind of doing like similar vibe to Florida. I mean, I don't know what you've seen, but
like a post Labor Day sort of aerification.
Yeah, it's like a spring, summer, and fall. I mean, the thing in Florida is that like some courses, it does depend, but and this is a whole nother discussion that maybe I could talk to a super about this on the pod. But like, you know, if you're doing six aerifications a year, it kind of sucks for your members. Like
which is why people have kind of gone away from that.
Yeah, extended period of time where you know, everything is perfect. So yeah, enough with the maintenance. Pre and post round, you know, summertime, I'm getting there. Actually, that's a complete lie. I feel like I just roll in like 15 or 20 minutes early every time and, you know, maybe hit a ball. That's just kind of a stage of life thing, I feel like. But I mean, you got less daylight out. So you're just, I feel like in the fall, you're just kind of more efficient with your time. You're more thrifty. It's kind of get in, play nine holes and get out. And you leave with some sort of satisfaction when you do that. It's like, okay, I got a check in the box with my golf. I enjoyed every minute that I was out there, but I didn't linger too much. Is there anything else that sticks out about fall golf that's just kind of like, yeah, it's superior to summer. It's certainly superior to winter just by
well,
default.
Winter golf in my mind is hardly a thing these days. I don't know if in the true winter I will be playing even a lick of golf. But that's beside the point. I think one of the things that I think of as an association of fall golf that definitely doesn't exist in summer, set aside like the super early summer round, is, you know, say you show up and it's not super cold. Like I'm not talking 40 degree golf, but like 50 degree golf. You know, it's like it's cool, but it's not terrible out there. Realistically, you need to hit balls a hell of a lot more than you do in the summer when it's 85 degrees and that body's already loose and lubricated. But my version of swingle is coffee, Mud Bowl Half Calf, preferably Good Walk coffee. And so there's an attractiveness of kind of hanging in the pro shop where it's a little bit warmer and you can just kind of like sip coffee and yeah, you know, I'll show up to the first tee and give one of these, give one of those, and just kind of see what happens. You know, like it's not going to be anything pretty for the first few holes anyway. That's kind of the vibe I was gaining this past weekend. A little coffee plus a biscuit and a breakfast burrito. Far superior warm-up method to going out and hitting a bunch of balls. So that's terrible advice, but it's just it's how I kind of skin the cat when it comes to cooler fall golf. Yeah, so there's kind of that weird oxymoron of like you should probably be taking your warm-up more seriously, but kind of doesn't really happen that way.
You kind of cut it off during dirt. How many biscuits did you put down last weekend?
Four. Plus four breakfast burritos. So
excellent. All right.
Yes, I lost the under on the 4.5, but like I think that
the
breakfast burritos should mean so. Yeah, there you go. I won the game.
Good man.
I covered. I didn't win, but I covered. Let's put it that way.
That's the other thing that I want to talk about is sunscreen. You know, like sunscreen's really important. I'm having developing takes on sunscreen as we speak, but I'll spare you all that for now. Maybe next summer we can get into that.
Less than 30 seconds. Are we talking like quality? Are you concerned? Yeah. I think that I've never thought about, like, it's crossed my mind and I'm always just like, ah, you know what? We'll be fine. But I think all skin products that truly only like 10 seconds on the clock here, there's a good case to be made of really kind of cleaning house and making sure it's high quality shit only. Yeah, let's move on.
Yeah. If y'all ever want to do some research on what happened in 1972, feel free to do it. Or you can DM me for more. I'll provide you with anything you want. Best Fall Guy setup. I we're just obliged to talk about pure Michigan, which I've never
No,
experienced in the
fuck that.
fall.
Way too cold.
Yeah, but all right, so the Farmer's Almanac tells me that that fall
The Farmer's Almanac. Is that even still a thing?
that's a thing. They have it online now. But it says that technically it starts September 1 to December 1, which initially I thought was like, that's bullshit, you know? But as I was looking into the aerification schedules, and this goes well beyond golf, of course, but I was like, yeah, I mean, really the ideal fall golf window in my book is like, you may disagree with me here, but like 45 to 55 degrees,
Now,
where
fuck that. That's way too cold.
I seriously believe that. It's like, I think that's like peak turf conditions, you know? And yes, it's a little bit cold in the morning. Like maybe you're talking about a frost delay, but probably not. But I think that's truly late stuff, and you're getting more of that in November than you're getting in October.
If
So.
it's 45 Monday morning in New Orleans, which it won't be, but if it were, I would be sitting in the clubhouse with a bag of beignets, and I'd let you go figure it out.
I'd be like, Henry, you've got 90 fucking seconds to get to the tee, or we're gonna have to fly home.
I got four beignets here. Okay. That takes precedent.
Oh God, the content's gonna be awesome out in New Orleans. I'm gonna get Henry running to the tee with like steam coming out of his Good Walk cup. That'll
Fourth
be
coffee of the day. Yeah.
enough. Where do you want to go see? Like, if you had to take one trip right now, you know, next fall to go play golf and shoot some Thai podcast offsite content, see some pretty colors, what would it be? Where would it
So
be?
here's the deal. I've actually been working a lot on trips as of late for, I mean, shit, we still got time this year. But
We do.
my thing is that like fall golf, one of the peculiarities of it from a travel perspective is it becomes much more difficult, especially when you're someone like me, that if I show up and it's 44 degrees, I'm like, God bless it. Why am I paying $500 to play this course today? You know, like if you're going to play somewhere nice and you're gonna have a caddy and all that shit and traveling there. I don't want to roll the dice on what the temperature may be. And so that's what, like you say, Michigan. It's like, okay, well, if you get lucky on October the 22nd in Michigan, yeah, you might get just an unbelievable day. It might be 66 degrees and sunny and just beautiful. But if you get unlucky, it might be 34, right? And so I think that's one of the strange things about fall golf is that, yeah, when we're talking about like when it truly has reached fall for the vast majority of the country and set aside kind of what you threw out early of like Florida, California, where you hardly ever get that true fall sort of weather. Like if we're talking New Jersey and Ohio and that, you know, some of the better golf places where, yeah, like I would still be thinking about traveling to in a couple of weeks. And again, this is kind of a me problem, but like I don't want to roll the dice on what that weather may end up being. And so, I think that fall golf for that reason as well becomes more ad hoc for obvious reasons. Like it's more local golf. There's less travel that goes on because, and to some degree, I think that's going to be true of anybody, you know, especially as you push even a little bit later and we start talking about frost delays and some of those sorts of implications. Like no one's going to take a trip up to fucking Wingfoot, right? Like on, you know, 10th of November. Because like who knows if that even happens? That's more like member play. And so
Right. And you've got football
that's an
season and
interesting
all the
piece of
rest.
it.
Like, people just want to be home.
Right. So I think that but like speaking from a purely personal perspective, that's been something that I've been kind of wrangling with lately. It's like, yeah, I'd like to go here and I'm looking at the weather forecast and like, you know, okay. So like I've clearly been worth thinking about this the last few days. Like Manhattan in the next like 12 days. It's kind of consistently like lows of 47, highs of 58. You get a couple of days in there that are like pushing the low 60s, but then there's some rain. And so you see what I mean? It's like if you get 55 in rain, I'm like, no, like I'd rather be sitting on my couch watching a football game. Like I don't need to travel and pay money to play golf when it's 55 and raining.
Yeah.
But if you get that good one, you know, if you get 63 and sunny, it's like that's special stuff. So that's kind of where we're at. I think that's a nice platform to jump into, dress, big clothes when it comes to fall golf. You know,
Big
this is where
textile.
you can get just the magical stuff, you know, where it's pants, it's a vest, maybe you go out there with a hoodie and then the hoodie comes off. But then you also are starting to enter the season where it's like, no, you're going out there, you know, when you're war camo and you've got like six layers on and all that sort of bullshit.
You remember Mr. Fashion from golf? I hate giving Golf Digest shout outs on this platform, but Golf Digest, there was that Mr. Fashion guy with the nice glasses. Like you have on some nice glasses today, but
Fortunately, I do not recall.
well, you know, he did a nice gig for a while where, you know, he put together some nice outfits and thing. I always loved the way that he did it. I'm curious how you feel about like an underlayer, like a tightly clinging, you know, kind of a mock neck type vibe that really keeps the body heat in. Are you pro that
All
sort of
in.
garment? All
Yeah,
in.
all in on that. I think that's like one of the most important things, especially when it gets cooler. A
Yeah.
properly fitting skin tight shirt that isn't going to be restrictive to the swing is just critical.
You know what's odd is it probably doesn't look too sexy, but I would love if somebody would create just like a little bit of movement opportunity kind of on under the underarms. You know, that would help me. You know, because I got a big turn. You know, I hit the ball a mile. I'm mad flexible, but I got to get way back there. You know, and sometimes I struggle with that garment. But what I don't struggle with is quarter zips. And I know that everybody listening right now, they're just, you know, throughout the summer they've just been, you know, if you're smart and you're buying merchandise, like yeah, you have a million hats. Like yeah, you have a million golf shirts. You know, the real ones go for the quarter zips because they know that. You know, just that one day you're going to really want it. And you've probably got way too many in your closet. And it's time, boys. It's time to bring them out. It is quarter zip season. So whether you wear kind of one of those tight undergarments or whether you don't, it's still quarter zip season. And that's what I love.
Quarter zips are what make men into women. You know, women spend 12 grand on one dress that they wear one night, you know, because they want to
Yes.
look good.
And they
Men
do
spend
look good.
$150, they do look good. Men spend $150 on a quarter zip that you might only wear that thing a handful of times in the year, not to play golf. I mean, you get a good quarter zip and like you'll be beating the guys in the office over the head with it very
Yeah.
quickly. You know, I
Logo
got
bingo.
my good got my new GoodWalk hoodie, and like I've already worn that thing like seven times. I think I've had
Yeah.
it for 6 days, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's what turns a guy into a girl real fast. Like you'll get a quarter zip, and you may only bust that thing out for like one good round or two good rounds a year. But my God, you show up ready to go, and
Yes.
you win a match in a nice quarter zip. Have a couple cold beers after. I mean, you're driving home just feeling like a god.
Couple more things before we close out the episode. One more thing on quarter zips.
Can I go ahead?
Yeah.
Go ahead. I just have to make sure I get there.
The absolute pinnacle as far as weather, dress, all the rest goes. And to a certain degree, the conditions go along with this, but if you can wear shorts, a golf shirt and a quarter zip and never get hot, it is as good as it gets. Like you have to know that it's all downhill from there for the rest of the year, because you know it's one thing if you go out quarter zip you know and you get a little hot on hole 7, you got to stuff it in your bag and hopefully you're not schlepping around one of those like you know giant Sherpa packs that Titleist makes and you know hopefully you're gaming like a decently sized bag that can maybe fit a quarter zip. I mean, that's the ideal size bag in my opinion. It's like maybe I can fit a quarter zip in there, but I probably can't. But if you can get away with 18 holes and never get too hot, it's just money. Second thing is actually, is yours related to clothing or like golf in some
Clothing, clothing, right, kind of golf, but also kind of not. You know, I guess it's probably more early spring where we're seeing this out of him because he's not playing a ton of full golf. But, you know, when the weather's a little bit chillier and it, like when we're talking 50 in the morning, but then might get up to, you know, mid 60s or even 70 during the day. Just prime, absolute prime, Mr. Clean, crispy V-neck season, right? Like,
yes.
And so I'm definitely a little bit more of a quarter zip guy and rapidly have become a hoodie guy over the last couple of years with golf. But I have over the years had a couple of those crispy merino V-neck sweaters like Cat wears. And we're going to get real weird real fast if we keep talking about
Cat. It's right below V-neck. The Adam's apple. Just
oh God. And you'd like the sleeves roll up, you know, just kind of mid forearm and just magical stuff. Yeah. So that's,
it helps if you're ripped, you know, it does.
Yeah. That you make clothes look good rather than the other way around.
But that, speaking that of Cat, cause that was kind of my last token is, one of my favorite golf courses to watch growing up was the Chevron World Challenge at Sherwood, dude. Because yes. it was first week of December, which according to the Farmer's Almanac is no longer fall. Fucking the Farmer's Almanac.
That's gonna be the title of this episode. Farmer's Almanac. Get a sponsorship.
But dude, I think it was a Nicklaus course, but like I loved watching that tournament. And it felt like fall, like the leaves were like, you know, in California, like the leaves are like, I might change color. If you treat me the wrong way, I might change color. But, you know, they just go right back and the leaves never fall off the trees. It was just awesome. Like watching Cat and Rocco and ZJ and.
Yeah, just, that's the problem. That's what I was going to say. That's the problem with that tournament. Like, I love that tournament, except ZJ had that hole out and beat Cat. Year. Fuck. ZJ. I don't know what
you're about. In order to not say anything negative, we're going to cut it off here. shopgoodwaltcoffee.com.
Well, I do have one more thing to say, and this is, I've been holding on this one for a little while, but this is important to close out the episode and kind of contextualize everything. You know, a lot of people, I feel like in the last handful of days, just people that have been around me on the internet, whatever, I'm just seeing a lot of Chipotle content as of late. And I just want to make sure that we're all very clear on one.
You guys well fed or not?
Chipotle sucks. I am so anti-Chipotle. It's unbelievable. Like I've said this before, and I know people probably have a good clean sense of where I sit, but I think it's like, I think people think it's a little bit of a bit. I could not be more anti-Chipotle. It's so bad. It's so bad. Like, this guy that works with me, he's been ordering it the last few days. Of course, like I have not been ordering it, but I'm still getting to see kind of the sort of business they're running or lack thereof. And like day one, this guy orders a bowl. They've got this new chicken. Now, this does somewhat interest me. Apparently, it's like pretty spicy. This guy has pretty good spice tolerance for most things typically. And I mean, he's like over there crying, like literally crying. And I kind of look over and I'm like, what's going on over here? So they're just like crushing people with this chicken. Well, he orders it again the next day. And I was like, as a joke, because like they screwed up my order and I ordered regular chicken, but I've got the spicy chicken again, which is just classic. It's just classic Chipotle. So I just need to make sure that we're all very, very clear on one thing in this world. You know, golf is a very opinionated world. Like I'm respectful of everybody's opinions as long as they don't have to do with Michael Block or Tom Fazio. But Chipotle sucks. And if you're a fan of the Thai podcast and you're also a fan of Chipotle, that is the definition of mutual exclusion. And we need to change something here. So that's my piece. That's all I've got. Topo Chico, Big Blueberry, Good Walk Coffee, varietals, fog off, putting, New Orleans, the claw. Peace.
We'll catch you next week. Peace.